I'm contributing to the society, but I cannot express my individuality. I'm only a part of something bigger. I'm not myself alone. And this is a big problem. Now, in a family, it is absolutely necessary to have both. In a family, it is absolutely necessary to have a feeling that you are a part of a larger self, larger picture, and to be assured that you are also an individual. Why is it so important? We spoke before about two absolutely necessary ingredients for family relationship. And this is love and respect. Love is what makes me want to move towards somebody. If I love you, I'm going to come to you, I'm going to hug you, I'm going to kiss you, I want to unite with you. Respect, imagine somebody very respectable who you're about to meet. Big politicians are not respectable anymore, I know. But big economist, big scientist, you saw he did so much for the country and you really appreciate him. But then when you will see him walking into the room, are you going to run to him and hug him and kiss him? Chances are you won't. Chances are you will actually stand back if you really respect him. And chances are you'll be even nervous if you will know you have to meet him. Why? You really love him. He did so much for the country and for you. Yeah, but respect makes me step back from someone. Just like respect forces me to step back from someone in space, respect forces me also to step back from someone in terms of my views and my ideas. If I love you, but I don't respect you, I will be forcing you to do whatever I think is necessary for you to do. That's what happens when our children are little. When my kids were little, I knew that they don't know when to dress warm, when to dress cold. I would dress them how I think they have to be dressed. They didn't know when is the time for breakfast, when is the time for lunch, when is the time for supper. I would feed them whenever I think they need to be fed. And then they grow up. And the hardest part of any parent's life is to figure out when do you need to start stepping back in which areas. But slowly, you understand that if your child says that he's not cold, maybe he is not cold. He's already 40 years old and he can probably figure out himself if he needs to wear a scarf or not. You know, probably by that time, you could allow that. I agree. That's a Jewish mother's approach. So then there are really two parts to respect. Sometimes the respect is enough for me to allow a person to do what he thinks he has to do. You are not cold? Okay. It's okay for you not to wear a scarf. Sometimes, if my respect is even bigger, then I will listen to what person says, what I need to do, I will follow his advice. In my life, that's already much bigger respect. So in other words, sometimes if I don't have any respect for a person, then I will be, if you will imagine it, in space, invading his territory. I will be in his territory. Why? Because I'm telling him what to do, and I'm not even considering his opinion of what he wants to do, right? When my daughter wanted to run outside without a coat in the winter, I would tell her, no, 1 second. You're getting dressed and you're going outside, right? So I'm not considering their desires at all. I'm invading their space. Sometimes I have enough respect to stay outside of their territory. I'm not invading their space, but I'm not letting them into my territory. I would not take my kids' advice on what I'm supposed to be wearing. You know, you could dress whatever you want. If you are saying you're not cold, it's fine, go. But don't tell me not to wear my scarf. So I'm staying out of their territory, but I'm not letting them into my territory. Sometimes, hopefully in issues which are a little more complex, what to put on when you're going outside, hopefully in issues more important than just whether to wear a scarf or not, but I'm about to do something and somebody comes to me and says, you know what, I think you should do something else. And I will think to myself, you know what, I would not say so myself. But this guy probably really knows what he's doing. He probably really knows what he's saying. So I'm going to let him invade my territory, and I'm going to listen to what he says. That's if I have even more respect for him. So my love for somebody makes me invade their space. My respect for somebody forces me to stay away from their space. Okay? Love and respect are the opposite feelings which are necessary for any relationship. If I just love somebody, without respect, I'm going to overrun them with my love. I'm going to smother them. I'm going to bulldozer them with my love. Okay, that's a stereotype of a Jewish mother. Okay, if I respect them without love, I will stay away from them. But there's nothing that connects me to them. You know, they were asking a Jew in Russia, what do you think about the Tsar? The Jew in Russia would say, I don't think of him, and please God, he should not think of me too. So I respect him, but I'll stay away and we'll keep it this way. So love is connecting me to other people, but it will force me to overrun them. Respect is forcing me to stay away from other people, but there's nothing that connects me to them. So that's why you need love and respect. You need both. So the idea of communist relationships where I trust them to do whatever they can and I trust them to take whatever they need, this idea makes me feel like a part of one unit with my spouse. We are in it together. A communist society can work only if people are inspired by the ideal of the society that they are contributing to, which again, in a country, probably cannot work ever, but in a house, in a home, in a family, it should work. But then together with that, I need to feel like I'm an individual, and another person must feel like he or she is an individual too. And this is the problem of many people's relationships. This is why, by the way, speaking of Torah and mitzvahs, this is why husband and wife's relationships are based on what is called in Jewish law, laws of family purity, laws of mikvah, when husband and wife can be intimate certain times and cannot be intimate other times, because this is exactly it. Sometimes you are uniting together. It's an ultimate love, but sometimes you need to give space to another person. You need to have both. And people need to have their individuality. And this individuality is also based on the trust. You should trust a person to have his own individuality. Manis Friedman often refers to it as every single person needs to have his own closet. A wife has her closet. You don't go into my closet. Husband has his closet. Now, you might be thinking, uh-oh, what is he keeping in his closet over there? I don't know. Oh, boy. That's a problem of trust. Maybe he is keeping his journal there where he writes how much he loves you, and that's why he'll be very embarrassed if you will read it. Maybe he's keeping the present that he bought there before your birthday and doesn't want to show it to you too early. Maybe. Maybe he has some secrets, some dark skeletons in his closet. Maybe. But you need to trust him. So everybody needs to have their own closet. Everybody needs to have their own individuality. And without this, you cannot have a normal relationship. And this is why, by the way, in the Torah, the Rebbe spoke very often that each person in their family need to have their own items of Jewish rituals. Every kid needs to have their own siddur. The Rebbe wanted every child to have his own siddur with his name in it. Why? It's his. It's not family's. It's not family's Judaism. It's my Judaism. A kupat zedakah, pushka, for charity. A person should have his own, and preferably the Rebbe said they should inscribe their name on it also. It's mine. Very often when I meet families that complain to me that some of their family members are not as inspired about Judaism as they are. It happens, for example, it could be a family that started becoming observant. Let's say husband and wife started becoming observant and their kids don't seem to be interested. Or it could be a family that was always observant, but one of the kids doesn't feel like being so involved in Jewish life. Unfortunately, I have to deal with it. Again, every case is different, and there's no way to compare different scenarios and different family dynamics. By the way, sometimes between spouses, one spouse, husband or wife, are more involved in Judaism than the other one. So what do I hear from these kids or these spouses who are less involved and less inspired? What do these kids say? I want to go to a synagogue, I want to go to shul, and I want to take my kids with me. And my kids don't want to go. What do they say? I don't want to go to your shul. I don't want to go to your synagogue. When I want them to sit at our Shabbos table, what do they tell me? I don't want to sit at your Shabbos table. I'm not interested in your Shabbos. It's yours. It's not theirs. Shabbos is not their Shabbos. It's your Shabbos. Synagogue is not their synagogue. It's your synagogue. They're doing you a favor. They'll come with you. But it's not theirs. I need to feel that things are mine. And this is why it is so important for me to feel my individuality. Now, but individuality comes with a problem. If I feel like I'm an individual, then I will also feel that I need to express my opinion, and then I will have my own thoughts and my own feelings, and my own thoughts and my own feelings could contradict your thoughts and your feelings. The Torah says, just like there are no two people who look the same, there are no two people who think the same, there are no two people who feel the same. So it's a problem. It's a very big problem. So what do you do? What's the solution? If I had a chance to put a mezuzah in your house ever, I don't know if you heard me say that, but very often people ask me, why is it that when we put a mezuzah, it is on a slant? I usually tell people, this is because it is all Jewish custom to make a l'chaim when you put up a mezuzah, and after a l'chaim, it's very hard to put mezuzah straight. That's why it's a little crooked. So this is a deep Kabbalistic reason, but not the only one. I'll tell you there's another secret behind the mezuzah being slanted, a little deeper than this one. The Torah says that mezuzah has to be put on your doors. We read it in Shema. Uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha. You should write this text on the doorpost of your house. Wonderful. The question is, how do you place it there? You actually have to like sit and write. By the way, Karaim, if you know there were people who did not believe in the oral Torah, they actually would write text of the Torah on the doorpost. They would actually like etch it in. But we don't do that. Our sages are asking, which way do you put it? How do you put the scroll? Do you put it upright or do you put it vertically? I mean, do you put it vertically or do you put it horizontally? So there is a debate, and the rabbis are trying to infer from other places where it says which you should place something somewhere. How do you place it? Do you place it like this? Do you place it like that? They're making textual analysis. And believe it or not, the opinion that said that you have to put mezuzah upright is ruled to be prevailing. Mezuzah has to be put upright, period. We have a solution. We have an answer. So now, why is it that whenever you come to any Jewish house, you see it slanted? Well, it's mostly upright, but it's a little bit slanted. Why is it slanted? I will tell you why. Because the Torah tells us that mezuzah is placed on the door to protect you, to protect the house. And to protect the house, you need to have a blessing. And the biggest blessing you could ever expect from God is coming through peace in the house. And peace can be achieved only with compromise. What does compromise mean? Compromise does not mean that, you know what, I'm not sure what to do, you're not sure what to do, let's figure something in between. No. Compromise means I'm sure what to do, and you're sure what to do. Compromise means even if you know 100% that you're correct, as the ruling in Talmud is, the ruling is that you are correct, it's supposed to be put upright. That's what the Torah says, and Torah is the truth. You have the truth. You still have to compromise. And I will bring you an example from my own life. Whenever you talk to somebody, you come to any smart person for a piece of advice, and they will listen to you, they'll listen about your dilemmas, and they will say, you know what, you need to compromise. It's going to be a very good piece of advice, very wise wisdom of a sage. But then pick an area that they really feel passionately for, whatever. A political issue. Now, you know, you might heard the elections in America soon, you heard about it, right? This guy is a diehard Democrat or diehard Republican. And you're telling him, you just gave me an advice to compromise. So, but I have a question. I have a similar dilemma, but in the area of, you know, a political issue. He'll say, no. Here already we don't compromise. Whatever you care for, that, no. That's where we draw the line in the sand. No. There's no compromises there. So I'm here to say that you need to compromise everywhere, including the things that you care for. And I will bring you an example of how it plays out in my own life. I'm a rabbi. You probably heard about it, right? Okay. My job is to encourage people to observe the Torah laws. You probably figured that by now also, right? I'm here to go around. That's why I met you for the first time. I asked you to put on tefillin, right? Yes. I'm here to encourage people to do mitzvahs. Now, comes a family. And like I said, very often, different members of the family have a different level of observance, a different interest in the Torah observance. And I meet families very often where one is more interested in certain mitzvah or in Torah observance in general, and the other one is less interested. And it would be natural for me to right away jump and say, no. I will be convincing the one who is less interested to be more interested. And I will tell the one who is more interested, no, you stick to your guns. You don't negotiate like politicians today. You know, I don't negotiate. I stand by my principles. So you will see, I don't do that. People are shocked when they find out. I, as a rabbi, very often tell people, you know, slow down on your observance. Don't do it yet. Don't do it now. Why? Because a family relationship is much more important. Now, I do believe that you need to increase in your Torah observance. I do believe that. But I also believe that family relationships are very important. So between these two things, you need to find a compromise. How? In what shape? That's already very individual. There's no one rule fits all. Never. But this idea should always be present. And I often tell people that, listen, you are the driver of Torah observance in your family. You know, like a train. Train has a locomotive and then has cars behind it. You know, you're like the locomotive. But you know what? Sometimes locomotive speeds off without the cars. It's a little disturbing because people wake up next morning and they're still in the same place where they were yesterday because locomotive just drove off. You need to hold cars behind you. Oh, you're going to be going much slower if you're holding cars behind you. That's true. It's hard. Ah, the cars are going to be slowing you down. Yes, they will. But that's the only way to do it. So this is where the Torah observance is not only about specific Jewish rituals. Torah observance is about family life as well. And in family life, a very crucial component of it is what we just touched, cohesiveness. If I'm an individual, if I feel like I'm my own self, it's very hard to work together in team with another person. The more someone feels his own self, the less of a team player he usually is. I want what I want. I think this is how it's to be done. That's it. But cohesiveness is extremely important very often in sports, as you probably already know. I don't know much about sports, but one thing I do hear all the time, baseball and football, any game you would think, they discuss players. And sometimes a team has every best player in the world. Every player is an A-lister. And he is the best, and this one is the best at defense. This guy is the best at the offense. They are all the best at what they do. But they lose. Why? Because another team maybe has worse level players, but they all work together as a team. And here, everybody is great at what he does, but he does only what he does. A sum of parts is greater than every individual. And this is why, in a family, cohesiveness is very important. And it's a challenge because I have to feel like I am myself. Now, I've got news for you. This challenge is even greater today. Why? Because modern life gives us a lot of conveniences that we didn't have before, but together with these conveniences comes a cost. For example, technology. Technology allows us to be much more efficient in our work and do business much better. Technology allows us to connect with people far away, with our friends, with our relatives who are in different countries. But technology has a big challenge. First of all, just think about it. When radio was just invented, a guy was able to only hear whoever is in the same room with him. I cannot hear anybody who is more than a few hundred feet away, even if the guy is going to be yelling. Suddenly, a radio was invented. I can hear somebody who is on the other end of the world. That's unbelievable. So that allowed me to connect with people far away. But that means I can be sitting in my room, in my living room, listening to somebody on the other end of the world and not paying attention to somebody sitting right next to me. And this is when the radio was invented. And then there was such a thing called TV. Then there was such a thing as a computer and internet. And now we have smartphones. You know, the smarter the phones are, the dumber the people are. So we have a very big challenge. And the challenge is twofold. Number one, that our technology teaches us how to connect with people far away, but it comes at a cost of our time that we spent with people near us. Not only time, also quality of time, because I might be sitting at my dinner table checking my phone every 5 minutes, So I'm physically present with my family, but I'm listening only with half an ear of what they're saying because I'm thinking about what my phone just messaged to me. So it's a problem that my phones are taking me away from being present with those who are near me. And then there's another problem. The problem is that my phones provide for me a form of connection to people who are far away. There's only one problem. This connection is not as real as my connection to people who I'm talking to face to face. It'll never be the same connection. But I might feel that I'm connecting with somebody when I'm not. Now, loneliness is not having people around. Loneliness is not having a connection with people around you. People today are very lonely. They are lonely because of technology. In a big part, it is because we are not as connected to people who are near us because of technology. And the connection that technology provides for us is not as real as the connection that we people really need. So this is a great challenge that we have in the modern world. And I see only one solution to this challenge. It is called Shabbat. We have 6 days to connect with people far away. We have 1 day a week to connect with people near us. When I sit with my family at our Shabbat table, I know phone will not ring, it is off. We are not watching anything on our screens. There's no TV, there's no radio, there's no emails, there's no internet. Nobody's gonna ring the bell. You can only knock on the door. I am focusing on those near me. This is an unbelievable gift. People today ask me very often, how can a person in the 21st century keep Shabbat like that? How is it even possible? To which I say, you know what? I've got news for you. I honestly don't know how did people in 19th century explain the need for keeping Shabbat. You can obviously explain the religious, the spiritual reason for it, which is the main reason why we keep Shabbat. But at the same time, let's say there's a person who is non-observant and not interested in any Jewish observance, and he comes to somebody who keeps Shabbat, and he says, why are you doing this stupid thing? You know what? I don't know what practical benefit of Shabbat was in 19th century. I'm sure there was, I just don't know. Today, you have to be an idiot not to appreciate the practical reason of Shabbat. I actually think that Shabbat was given back then, 3,500 years ago, for us today. Just Jews for 3,500 years were like thinking, why is it really so important not to use electronics on this day, not to use electricity on this day, not to light fire on this day? Now in the 21st century, we could explain it to you. Shabbat was given for us. Till now, it was just a prelude, introduction. So I'm obviously joking, but it's only part joke. And Shabbat is allowing us to connect now. And really, that's a metaphor for our general approach to Judaism. Very often, I give recommendations to people, and I know what people think. Sometimes, there were a couple of times I would talk to an Israeli guy. You know, there's a general rule in life. Whatever American thinks, this is what an Israeli says. So I know what people are thinking, but if I'm dealing with an Israeli guy, a couple of times I heard this being asked. Are you telling it to me because you really think it's better for me, or you're telling it to me because you're a rabbi and you have to promote mitzvahs? So I'm telling you, no. I'm recommending for you to start having Shabbat meal because I actually think it's good for you. Forget about my job as a rabbi. I actually think you'll benefit from it. I do, sincerely, because I see how I benefit from it. And this is our approach to the Torah in general. Torah will benefit your life. Very often people don't realize it. The Torah observance actually benefits your life. There is an excerpt from the Rebbe's teachings. The Rebbe said, when there is peace between body and soul, it makes peace between spouses all the easier. In other words, we have a body and a soul. I need to connect to my family members with my body and my soul. If my body and my soul are not in line, then how can I connect with other people's body and soul? So this is why it's so important to keep the Torah, and it helps our relationships. It helps us. And it is interesting, the Rebbe started a mitzvah campaign. You probably know mitzvah of putting on tefillin, mitzvah of charity, kosher, everything. Out of 10 campaigns that the Rebbe made, 7 were connected with a house. Kosher, something we do in a house. Mezuzah in a house. The Rebbe insisted that every Jewish house would have Jewish books. I'll go to synagogue, I'll read books there. No, your house has to be a Jewish house. It'll make your house a Jewish house if you have Jewish books there. It's going to show your family members, your kids, that it's important. that you have mitzvah of family purity, mitzvah of Jewish education. All of these are at home. Kupa tzedaka, pushka. The Rebbe said specifically to put it in your house. The Rebbe said to attach it to the wall of your house. It should be a part of your house. Drill it into the wall. And this is the foundation of our lives.